The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Connected Table Live. We are your hosts, Melanie Young and David Ransom, your insatiably curious culinary couple. Each week, we bring you the dynamic thought leaders who work front and center and behind the scenes in food, wine, spirits, and hospitality. We lead a delicious life, lately at home and less on the road, and we love sharing it with all of you. You're listening live. Today is November 25th, 2020. It's the day before Thanksgiving. We're on W4CY Radio, and of course, you can hear us anytime, anywhere on iHeart, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. So we're dedicating the show to what we're thinking about right now, food, because we always think about wine too, but we're cooking up a storm, right?
Yeah, it's by hook or by crook, we've actually made it to Thanksgiving 2020.
Safely.
So that's a good thing, safely. And a shout out to everybody out there who's listening and everybody who is either sheltering at home or with a small group of family this Thanksgiving. It should, no matter what, it should be a great day.
Well, we want you to enjoy it. And in the spirit of our first guest, live life deliciously. That's right. We like that. And that's also the name of the first book by our first guest, Tara Bench, aka to her fans and followers on her popular food blog, Tara Teaspoon. A little bit about Tara. Tara's from Utah. And she spent much of her life in and around food. She got a degree in the culinary arts from Utah State. Woohoo! And left for New York, where guess who she worked for? Martha Stewart. Yeah, as in Martha Stewart. I just love saying Martha. And she worked her way up from intern to food director at Martha Stewart Living Magazine. Pretty good. But she's an entrepreneur, so she stepped out on her own. And she has her own site and has a huge following and does cooking lessons and interactive and has her first book at Tara Teaspoon.
And, you know, I was surprised that this is her first book because she's been around for a long time.
Oh,
she's
yeah,
been in the
two
business
decades.
For 20-odd years, and she's never created a cookbook of her own. So this is we're actually really excited to have her on the show and talk about this book today.
So, hey, Tara, first of all, welcome to the Connected Table Live. And, hey, what took you so long to write your first book?
Oh, my goodness. Well, thanks for having me. And, you know, it just never seemed like the right time until it did. And so that was a few years ago when I signed the book deal and started creating sort of my two decades in the business worth of recipes and what I really wanted to share with everyone. So it did take me a while, but I'm so happy that it took me that long because I had so much more under my belt, so much more experience, so much more love for food and my likes and dislikes and things like that. So it's here now.
Well, a lot of people still don't like cooking at home, even though many of us are cooking at home. Just a little bit. David loves to cook, and I like to...
She likes to watch me cook.
I like to watch him cook and eat. And then in the old days, order and make reservations. Well, he made the food, I made reservations. But we love your book because it has so many cool, delicious twists. What is, for our listeners who may not be familiar, what Live Life Deliciously is about, give us that little elevator pitch about what it's about and what, when you open those pages, your readers will find and learn.
Yeah, I think you're right. If you like to cook, you loved this year. If you don't, you are having a tough time. We're cooking at home so much more. But this book really was that. I wanted to bring people into the kitchen, bring joy into the kitchen. And, you know, the tagline is recipes for busy weekdays and leisurely weekends, because that's how I cook. And I think that's how many of us cook, is we have some busy weekdays. We've got jobs. We have kids underfoot. We have things, appointments, and cooking on those weekdays and staying healthy and staying creative can be a challenge. And on the weekends, for me, that's when I get to enjoy my cooking so much more and make something that might take a little longer, a little slow cooker something. But that's what I wanted to bring to the pages of this book, is shake up your weeknight routine, try something flavorful and different that isn't too hard to do, and then get creative on the weekends and enjoy that time that you get to spend with food in the kitchen, cooking with people.
And, you know, it's a nice activity to do with your husband or your significant other or your kids. I mean, it can be mm-hmm. a fun activity, interactive activity, right?
Yes. And, you know, I think the saying is true. When you involve children in any project, whether it be cooking or, you know, building something, doing yard work, all of that, it takes longer and it's harder. But I think that's where the leisurely weekends come in, is if you have the time and energy, please bring your kids into the kitchen. That is how I got into food and food as a career. And I dedicate this book to my mother, because she did take the time to show me the way around the kitchen. And she loved cooking, and she instilled that in me. It was an enjoyable thing to put dinner on the table every night, even though it's still hard and you've got picky eaters and you're doing the dishes. But I grew to love food because of her and my grandparents that cooked and entertained with joy.
Well, let's talk about your growing up and take it back a couple of steps too, because you're from Utah. Now, I've read somewhere mm-hmm. that Utah eats a lot of Jell-O. It's the Jell-O state or something like that. So, but I don't really know any other dishes that come out of Jell-O out of Utah, to be honest with you. But tell us about growing up and your mom in the kitchen and how you got involved with food, and then really how you wanted to make it a career, because a lot of people cook with their parents when they're younger, but they go on to do other things and not as many people stick with it. What inspired you in the kitchen to actually create a career out of it?
Right. Absolutely. Yes, Utahns do eat a lot of Jell-O. I will validate that comment. I grew up with Jell-O. I mean, we had green Jell-O with carrots. We had orange Jell-O with mandarin oranges and cantaloupe. We had stuff in Jell-O and we ate it. But now I think a little bit less. I think that trend is waning. But Utah is, growing up, it was sort of that meat and potatoes style of cooking. It was hearty food. It was homey food. Delicious, fresh vegetables, you know, from the garden. And so really when I left for college and pursued my career in food, it's when I was able to taste a lot of new things. Funny enough, my family lived overseas when I was young. And so I wasn't a stranger to ethnic food and cultural differences and different flavors. But we certainly, you know, cooked a few fun, unique dishes at home. But I think once I started to explore restaurants in New York City and neighborhoods that were cooking authentic Chinese food and Jamaican food, and really enjoyed exploring that side of food, is when I appreciated all the different ingredients that we can use to make a meal. It just, you know, coupled with having studied food in college and going on to work in magazine test kitchens, I think all of that came together to really push me into that love of creating recipes and sharing recipes. But I grew up cooking with my mom. And when it came time to say, hey, what are you going to major in school? I wasn't interested in much. I didn't want to go into English or be an attorney or go into business. And so I found my way into culinary arts, and it was just the perfect place for me. I minored in journalism, so I loved learning how to write and write about food. And then I took that on to go into magazine publishing and really learned everything about that world when I was at Martha Stewart, and just created a love for the art of food.
Well, Tara, I also want to, you know, working with Martha must have been an incredible experience because I know she's a stickler for perfection, but I also want to let everybody know that you also were the food director for the esteemed Ladies Home Journal, which is one of the seven sisters, which I grew up reading. My mom had, you know, them all my heart, McCall's, Family Circle, Ladies Home Journal, Women's World, Good Housekeeping. I think I'm missing two, Women's Day, and I know that I'm missing another
Better
one.
Better Homes and Gardens.
Better Homes and Gardens.
Exactly.
Yes. Awesome. I love them all. Many of our listeners are professionals, but many are not. What goes into the process of creating a recipe and how do you tackle it? Because it's kind of a tabula rasa. I mean, you start with the ingredient and then you build. So how is your approach?
Yeah, you know, it's different every time. I think it depends on, say I am creating a recipe for a food client. So, you know, I do a lot of consulting and creating recipes for brands. And if they want something specific using a specific ingredient, I go about it in a different way than I would just at home coming up with something wonderful. So I do, I take that ingredient. I say, hey, what is a tasty way to eat this ingredient? What is a visual way to eat this ingredient? And I start to combine those two things. And I do that at home as well. If I'm just cooking for myself and saying, opening the fridge and creating a recipe out of what I've got. I do both. I think, ooh, what would taste good, but also how is this going to look good? So I do a lot of food styling, and I learned how to food style for photography when I was in magazine publishing. And that visual eye really helps me create recipes. I think, yes, you can make some great glazed carrots and throw them in a dish, but what's going to make them look beautiful? You know, is there a crumbly something I could put on top? Is there an herb I could sprinkle? Is there a spice that would deepen their color and make them look more appetizing? So all of those things go into creating recipes for me.
Well, people do eat with their eyes. So the visual is important instead of just making a big old hot mess, which sometimes I do. You know, one of the things we're looking at the book, you can see the international inspiration. We're looking at the Tulum snack spread, not just the Mexican snack spread, but the Tulum. Let's be very specific, Tulum. Give us some examples of the recipes in the book that reflect your experience living abroad with your parents and your thoughts on turning something from just the basic American dish into the global experience that you can share.
Sure. Yeah, I did put a lot of what I call global ingredients in the book. And I feel like it is the way I eat now, as opposed to 10, even 15 years ago. So many more flavors, spices, and ingredients and sauces are available to us and accessible. And I love bringing that into my kitchen. So yes, the Tulum spread, it's, I mean, just reminiscent of my trip to Mexico and all the wonderful authentic flavors. And I think most people know how to make a pretty great taco, but I have a really fun chicken taco in the cookbook, and it's simple and really delicious. Like, I love that you can keep it simple. You don't have to be braising something for 10 hours to get really great authentic flavor. Some other things are, I love incorporating a little bit of authenticity into a simple, easy to make dish. So I have several curries in the book, and I use red curry paste or a mixture of my own spices to make a golden coconut curry that I throw some Thai meatballs into, or a peanut curry that is as easy as can be, and it's all vegetables, and oh my gosh, it just, you want it every night. But I also have added things like an adobo marinade that you would think is Mexican with chilies and things, but it's a Filipino adobo sauce with soy sauce and garlic and lime and apple cider vinegar. And I'll tell you what, who would have thought you could make a lovely Filipino dinner at home with ingredients that you already have? So that's my goal. That's what I love saying. You probably already have this, or it's really easy to grab on the grocery store shelves, and you can make this fun meal.
Well, I have to say that you have a picture of the Thai meatballs in a in a Dutch oven in the book. And if there's anything that makes me want to jump, put my suit on and just dive into that picture, it's that dish. That's looks fabulous in the book. Let me just tell you
who is the food photographer, because we want to give that person a shout out.
Oh my goodness, he's amazing. His name is Ty Meekum, and he is a dear friend and such a talent. He brought the food to life.
Yep. Stunning. The dish that made me go, whoa, 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 is the burrata with the grilled peaches. You know, what I loved about it is I have a thing for pistachio and oranges, which is kind of like a little Middle Eastern thing. You've got the Italian burrata. You've got the grilled peaches, which I know are seasonal, but you could maybe do another type of fruit. And you've got this Middle Eastern flavors into this dish that just looks so simple to make and is so yummy.
Well, I think what I like about that dish in particular, Melanie, is that it's a chimichurri, but it's it's an orange zest chimichurri.
Right.
So it's non-traditional. Yeah. And you're playing with flavors in that dish as well. It's really interesting.
Well, you know, right now we're not traveling much, so this is kind of fun to read your book.
In the beginning of the book, Terry, you actually go through some pantry staples that you think everybody should have in their kitchen. Why don't you give us a few that people might not think of to have? Like, everybody has salt and pepper, but give us a few examples that you think should be in the new kitchen pantry.
Right. Well, it's not an extensive list of new pantry staples. And it really is that philosophy of so many new things are accessible to us now that we wouldn't have had several years ago. So some of them were just, you know, instead of having just the flour, butter, sugar, cornmeal in there, I love to have a selection of hot sauces and tahini. Maybe a sweet chili sauce. You can't imagine how many dressings and dips you can make with just a simple sweet chili sauce. And spices, we have the cinnamon and ginger and all of the basics, but make sure you've got cumin in there and paprika, different peppercorns, sesame seeds, sumac. I love using sumac, and I think it's so much more accessible than it was. You had to mail order it even 5 years ago, and now you can find sumac, and that sort of lemony aromatic spice makes just the simplest vegetable dish amazing. Curry pastes, different rices, short grain, long grain, they all have different flavors and uses. So those are some of the pantry staples that I love keeping on hand so that I can create these, you know, out of the box dinners.
Well, that's a good term, out of the box, because I like these. This really is a refreshed way to look at pantry staples, because most people have such basic, you know, as David said, salt, pepper, maybe olive oil, basic white rice. But, you know, try black rice, you know, try brown rice, try long grain rice. Yeah. I mean, there's so many. You know, we are in the holiday season and people are planning to cook maybe smaller quantities because we're not in groups. What are some examples of dishes that maybe would work well for a smaller, I know some of the recipes are great for groups, as we saw, like some of the platters, but if you're cooking for one or two and you really want it to be, or maybe three or four, what would be some examples of holiday dishes that would capture that feeling of tradition, but also that feeling of transporting you elsewhere? Because many of us also want to be elsewhere at the holidays.
Exactly. We really do. And I say at the holidays, certainly make those traditional recipes that you love, at least make one of them to bring home that tradition in such a crazy year. Food really can transport us, like you said, to that place of comfort and joy and that feeling of, you know, home and safety. So I say definitely pull out those old favorites and then, like you said, transport yourself to someplace else. And really, I mean, the timing of my book was a little off with 2020 because it really is about feeding people and groups and sharing food. But I'll tell you what, recipes are easier to cut in half than you would think. And, you know, all of these recipes from my roasted cauliflower and smoky romesco, what a great side dish to add to your holiday meals that totally transports you to another place. But easily half that. Use half the head of cauliflower. Use half the ingredients. Save that romesco sauce that you just made. You can freeze it. Save it for another dish. Make another meal out of it. So I am a huge proponent of really taking it into your own hands, doing a tiny bit of math, you know, cutting two in half. It's one, guys, really easy. But I think still explore, still make these recipes, but like you said, adjust them for how many you're serving. there are definitely ways to, you know, I make a lot of marinades and sauces in the book that I use in different recipes. So that's my thing, is if you make a sauce and you have leftover, keep it, create another meal out of it. And in one of my chapters called Weeknight Routines, I show you how to do that. I make one rub, one marinade, one chicken dish, and then you're using that in several meals.
Well, let's talk about busy weeknights and things like that a little bit, because earlier we touched on it. And, you know, I think our readers would be interesting because we are all busy, and weeknights usually are busier than weekends, obviously. But, you know, what are some ways that people can make something and then stretch it out for a couple of days during the week, or serve it a couple of days later to good effect?
And not just to have it be a basic leftover. And we're getting ready to face leftovers as well with Thanksgiving.
Yes, Thanksgiving,
so it applies here, too.
Thanksgiving is the king of all leftover meals, as we all know.
Yes, exactly. So I do things. I have a lot of recipes like that in the book. One of them that really stands out, I love making a garlic lime carnitas. And it's a slow cooked pork. You're going to make that on the weekend. And then I've got meals to use that extra carnitas, the pulled pork, throughout the week. So one of my favorites is the carnitas tachos. So, you know, tater tot nachos. Delicious. You can use that leftover meat. The next time you eat it, it's the jalapeno cornmeal waffles with the carnitas on top. So it's a savory cornmeal waffle. The whole family will love it. But you're using that meat that you already cooked. Same with using chicken and pork. I've got lemony chicken pasta that you're going to use your roasted chicken that you made on Sunday for this pasta. And just by adding some frozen artichokes and buttery, you know, Parmesan toast pieces, you've got a great weeknight meal.
Absolutely. For me, it's adding feta. If I put feta or lemon on anything, I'm done. I mean, really, just add feta and lemon and salt and pepper and maybe a twist hot sauce, and I can turn something really basic into, you know, something else. It's like my favorite type thing. So I'm curious, you know, what are your... For you personally, what is the dish that just sends you into dream world? We had this discussion last night. What our last meal would be? Uh-huh. What would yours be if you could conjure up from your book your ultimate last meal?
It would be really hard to choose. It's kind of like asking me my favorite food. It changes all the time, and usually I say it's chocolate chip cookies. Because I really like those, but
you like them crunchy or chewy? Crunchy or chewy?
No, soft, caramelized, crispy on the outside and soft in the middle.
With walnuts or without?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'd say without, but on a special occasion, let's throw in a walnut.
Oh, different. And do you have a specific type of chocolate you use?
Oh, I absolutely love a chocolate chip cookie with both kinds of chocolate, milk, and semi-sweet.
Oh,
so that's my go-to.
Oh, wow. I haven't had a good chocolate chip cookie in a while. I'll have to do a real one from you.
it's so good. And there's a variation of my very favorite recipe in the book. But last meal, I'll tell you what, I love comfort food. So probably picking from my book, I would probably start with that burrata with grilled peaches and the chimichurri. And none of this goes together, but I really like these things. Then the caramelized onion and smoked Gouda mac and cheese. That is the ultimate comfort food for
me.
It's so good.
That looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it tastes, the caramelized onion and the smoked Gouda, it tastes like you've got bacon in there, but you don't. It's just cheese and onion. It's so good. Some of the others, I definitely think the chicken biscuit sandwich. It's my buttermilk biscuits with chicken and coleslaw and honey butter. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. And probably, oh gosh, I love the soft ginger snaps with sweet orange cream cheese in the dessert chapter. My dessert chapter is the biggest chapter because I am such a sweet tooth. I love those.
And we're glad you have a good dessert chapter. We recently interviewed someone who we loved, Dan Kluger, and he focused only on savory. And we asked him why no dessert. And he said, it's not my forte. I'm going on, you know, it's a decision to add dessert to a chapter, right? It's a big, because it's, it's a big amount.
It's a commitment.
So, you know, your last meal could be my last meal. I mean, you just named some of the dishes that I'm like gaga over looking at the photos right now. I'm from the South. So, you know, biscuits are constantly my big challenge to make the perfect biscuit. And I love the idea of yours is quite interesting. And a chicken biscuit's just a classic. And, you know, because it's your last meal, you can eat whatever you want.
You can throw bacon.
That's right.
You can throw bacon on
calories
top.
Don't count.
Calories don't count at your last meal.
They sure don't. You know, Tara, I've got a question for you. What in this book, what do you want people not to be afraid of?
Oh, I love that question.
When they're reading and learning from this book.
I don't want them to be afraid of trying a recipe that looks hard. I have written these recipes so that they are not hard. I want them to feel like I am right there in the kitchen with them. The way that I've worded the recipes, the way that I've instructed them how to cook it, I don't want them to be scared. Of course, there's more than five ingredients because you have to add flavor and layers to amazing food. But it doesn't mean it takes more than 30 minutes. It doesn't mean that it's harder or beyond your skill level. I want you to be able to read the recipe and say, oh, of course I can do this. It's all the same techniques and skills that I use to make grilled cheese sandwiches. You know, it's simple and there should be no fear in it. So, yeah.
Well, definitely there should be no fear in the kitchen. There should only be fabulous. And we love the name of the book because really that's, you know, we call ourselves the Insatiably Curious Culinary Couple because we like to live life deliciously no matter what. And yes. You know, we all have the right to go for the best ingredients and the best flavors we can, because why should food be dull? You know, it should always be exciting and delicious. And I think this book, again, for our listeners, the book is by Tara Teaspoon, a.k.a. Tara Bench. Your website is tarateaspoon.com. Mm-hmm. And it's Live Life Deliciously, recipes for busy weeknights and leisurely weekends. May we all have more leisure in our life as well as happy busy, right?
Yes, absolutely. Please.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure. I also just want to give a shout out. Tara and I are both members of La Dame d'Escoffier, leading women of fine food, beverage, and hospitality. You are a more recent member, I think, the past couple of years for the New York chapter, and hopefully we'll see you again in New York one day.
I know. Let's get together soon, I hope, right? Well, and isn't that wonderful? It's a great thing. And give books as gifts this holiday. You know, people are cooking more at home, and I'd love for your people to gift this book. So thanks.
We've actually given away a couple of books this fall to folks, and
we'll be doing a best
everybody's
of.
Everybody's cooking at home right now.
Yeah,
right?
We'll be doing a best of roundup as well at theconnectedtable.com, where you can also hear this show again. And we invite you to visit Tara at tarateaspoon.com, right?
Yes, I would love it, and ask all the questions. I'm on call for Thanksgiving, of course.
Oh, you and the butterball turkey people. Thank you for joining us and wishing you a very, very happy Thanksgiving and happy holiday, and congratulations on your first book.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tara.
All right. That was pretty delicious. And boy, what perfect way to end this show in the next segment with pie. Yes, we're going to be talking pie with a baking expert. So hold on. We'll be right back and introduce our next guest. You're listening to The Connected Table Live. Listening to The Connected Table Live. It's our pre-Thanksgiving Eat It Up show and Live Life Deliciously show. That was such fun, David, talking to Tara. And we're going to take you now to the perfect ending for the show. The next 20 minutes or so, we're going to talk about making and baking pie. Now, you know, who doesn't love pie, right?
I know I do.
I know. And remember, we always laugh about The Help because pie was a big part of the movie, The Help. Not the best pie, but we always go, you've been wanting some more pie. Well, we have one of the preeminent baking experts coming on with us now. Erin G. McDowell is the baking expert for Food 52. We've had Amanda Hester, one of the founders, on our show. We recently saw her on a national CBS segment about her book, The Book of Pie. And we're kind of excited that she's joining us here on the Connected Table Live. Do we have her on?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Erin G. McDowell. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're excited. We were excited to see you by chance on Saturday morning on CBS this morning. It was a great segment. And we said to ourselves, well, wait, we have her on Wednesday. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And the day before the big day, it's the very exciting day to talk about pie.
If ever there was a holiday that celebrated pie, it's Thanksgiving.
Did you know, I bet you know this. Is it true that every state in the United States has an official pie?
Well, and I don't know so much that every state has an official one, but I know that regionally across the states, especially on days like Thanksgiving, there are pies that are, you know, must-haves. And the one debate I always think of this time of year is the great sweet potato versus pumpkin pie debate, which is a hotly debated pie subject amongst fans of both styles of those pies.
I grew up with pumpkin pie.
I grew up with pumpkin pie, too.
Yeah. Who grows up with sweet potato pie? I do it with sweet potatoes, but we had them stuffed in oranges with little toasted marshmallows on top. Who has sweet potato pie for Thanksgiving?
Oh, in the South, the sweet potato pie is one of the most popular holiday pies, for sure. And while I also grew up with pumpkin pie, I have to confess, as an adult, I was swayed over to the sweet potato side, and I prefer sweet potato to pumpkin, and I'll say it loud here.
So, Erin, where did you grow up? Give us a little of your backstory. We know you grew up cooking with your grandmother who inspired you, but where did you grow up? And give us your favorite food memory.
I grew up in and around Lawrence, Kansas, which is a little college town in the northeastern corner of Kansas, not far from the border of Missouri. My kind of earliest food memories, my mother was also an amazing home cook and home baker, and she had this incredible kitchen in the house that I grew up in that had, you know, a wall oven and a sink and a big island, and it was just this, like, magical place, and I loved to kind of play and experiment in there. But I really grew to love cooking and baking with my grandma, and one of my favorite traditions for sure would be the day before Thanksgiving, this day, many years ago, I would go to her house over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house. She lives in the absolute middle of nowhere. And I would take all the ingredients to make pies, and we would make pies together the day before Thanksgiving. And then I would bring them back for the big feast the next day.
I think it's so cute because when I was reading through the intro, I think the intro in your book, you talked about how your grandmother would have everything set up, knowing that you were coming over, and she always kind of thought that you were doing it yourself. But in the beginning, she always knew that you guys were just going to get there and bake pies and then just eat pies just for the heck of it. So it's a very cute story, actually.
It really is. But you know what? A lot of people love pie. A lot of people are intimidated by making pie, starting with making crust. And I have to say, my mom was that one. She really liked to just go buy the Jif crust and then stick the real filling in it. But there's nothing like authentically made crust. You have a fairly significant dough tutorial. I call it the go-to dough tutorial in the beginning of the Book of Pie that talks about how to prepare a crust. What are some of the essential tips to make that perfect pie crust?
Well, one of the biggest things that people don't always understand is the size of the fat will equate to the end texture of the crust. So if you leave the fat in slightly larger pieces, you'll end up with a lighter, airier, more flaky crust. If you mix in the butter more, you'll end up with a still tender and crisp, but a slightly denser, more mealy crust. And that's one of the lessons that in the early part of the book that definitely, you know, people who've been making it the same way for a number of years or who might have learned from their grandma, they don't realize that it can be manipulated with different techniques to kind of yield different results. But the same recipe, just mixing it a little bit differently. And then the number one rule for people who are scared of pie dough is it likes to be cold. So when in doubt, chill it out. at any stage. It can be made, put in the fridge to be made cooler, and it'll never be mad at being colder than it is at any given time.
Do you recommend, you know, it's the same with making biscuits. When in doubt, chill it out. Do you recommend a certain type of flour to use?
I use all-purpose flour, and I have made it successfully with both a bleached and unbleached all-purpose flour. And the story I always tell is that my mom uses a specific brand of flour that she can get in Kansas that's locally milled there, and therefore it's very inexpensive. And I always joke that if my mom isn't going to use a specific flour that I recommend, probably most people making my recipes might not either. So I just like to make sure, especially pie, is really, really adaptable and flexible. So any all-purpose flour, and even I've written articles about using all other flours, and inside the book on pie, you know, I have things like spelt flour, rye flour, pumpernickel flour, cornmeal. So there's lots of different ways to pie for sure.
And also you also have for celiacs and people who don't, you know, cannot do gluten, you have some gluten-free options. You have, I thought the nut crust was kind of interesting.
Yes, the nut crust can be made from pretty much any variety of nut, finely ground, and it's bound with egg whites and sugar, and it forms this really crisp, toasty crust. There's also a crust that can be made with a gluten-free flour blend that you can make yourself, or I recommend one that's commonly available as well. And there's actually also a meringue pie crust, which is made from meringue and has no flour in it. So there are multiple options that are gluten-free. There's also a dairy-free pie dough, which would be vegan, because so many pie fillings, like fruit pie fillings, are naturally vegan. So it would be very easy to make those adjustments. You know, the general philosophy is more pie for everyone, I always say.
Works for me.
It certainly works for me. You know, one of the things that intrigued me most and surprised me most was that you say you can use vinegar or vodka in your pie crust. Tell me about that, because I've never actually heard of that before.
Well, this is actually something I certainly can't take credit for this. This is something that's been happening for many years. And I think I first read about the vodka trick from America's Test Kitchen. But both vinegar and vodka will do a little bit of job inhibiting gluten formation, which will just help to not overwork your crust. But they also contribute to hydration in a really unique way, where they, when you add them to the dough, they hydrate like water would, but when they hit the oven, they evaporate out quicker. And therefore, they make this really lovely crisp crust that has, you know, a better chance of baking up properly. I'm a big believer that there isn't just one right way to do things. So I've made my pie dough the same way for many years, with just four ingredients, nothing special: flour, salt, butter, and water. And I like to keep it really general like that, because then I'm, you know, just a few steps from pie at any given time. But those tricks, you know, they work. And so, especially for people who are kind of having trouble finding their true pie path, I say give those tricks a try. You never know what could be the one that, you know, kind of gives you that light bulb moment and makes you makes it click for you.
Well, it's interesting, because some people put sugar in their crust, and you don't. You prefer keeping it, as you said, the four ingredients, which I also thought was interesting, because sometimes in the South, and I am from the South, they put sugar in everything. You know, it's just sugar, sugar, sugar. I have a question for you. I actually have no idea how. I've really hardly made any pies in my life. I'm embarrassed to say. People make pies for us, and are, you know, but what is the purpose of pie weights?
So pie weights are something that you would use if you are par baking or blind baking your crust. Par baking stands for partially baking your crust, and blind baking is when you fully bake your crust. You blind bake a pie crust if you're filling it with a filling that's not going to be baked again. So think like chocolate pudding to make a chocolate cream pie. You would par bake your crust if you are going to fill it with a filling that does require being baked again. So like a pumpkin or a pecan, but it's just really difficult for a crust to bake thoroughly in the amount of time it takes for a filling for a single crust pie to set. So giving it a little bit of a head start with that par baking is crucial to no soggy bottoms. And there'll be no soggy bottoms on my watch. Thank you very much.
Oh, there's nothing worse than a soggy bottom, especially with a pie.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. As a little girl, I used to turn the pie over when I was in school. They'd make pecan pie, and I always flipped it over and just ate the crust. I love crust.
Good. Oh, me too. Yeah. You're speaking my language. And that's the thing, that the par baking is really kind of like respecting your crust to the maximum level.
Isn't that what good pie is all about, is the crust?
Trust the crust.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and so, You just use those weights to weigh it down and get it so that it doesn't puff up during baking. That's all they're
for. That's so good to know.
You know, there are a lot of recipes in this book, obviously, but there's also a lot of instruction in this book for the novice who wants to really get into baking pies like you did at one point. What are some suggestions that you have for how they can do it and not to be afraid of it as they go along?
Yeah.
And also key tools.
Yes. So the advantage of pie is that it really doesn't require that many special tools I just mentioned pie weights, but if you don't want to buy those, you can just use rice or dried beans from the grocery store as sort of makeshift pie weights, anything that'll weigh down the crust. So a good pan, I like metal and ceramic pans best. Metal is also the most nonstick, but both metal and ceramic do a good job of evenly kind of baking that outer crust to help, again, ensure no soggy bottoms. You need a good rolling pin. I like the kind that don't have handles, but I do believe that hand tools are a bit of a personal preference, and I certainly learned using a handled rolling pin. But if you've got something to bake in, it doesn't even have to be a pie plate. It could be a cast iron skillet or a cake pan or a baking sheet. I talk about all of those things in the book, and the thing that's so great about this particular book is that I tried to make it a little bit easier for people who aren't sure what to tackle first by giving every recipe a difficulty ranking. So if you're thinking, wow, I'm just getting started, I've never made a pie before, and I want something that's weeknight friendly, look for any of the recipes marked easy. There are pie crust recipes that don't even require a rolling pin. So you can just press them into the pan and you're halfway to pie.
Give us a few examples.
There's, the kind of classic pie crust that people think of, which is grinding up cookies or graham crackers, things of that nature, and combining them with butter to make a crust. But I also make homemade cookie style crusts, like an oatmeal cookie crust that you just can press into the pan and taste a lot like an oatmeal cookie. That's really delicious with like the carrot cake pie filling. It's like oatmeal cookie and carrot cake all mixed into one. Mm. It's so good. So there's lots of options. And the nut crust that you talked about before is a press-in crust that you can just kind of crumble in and press in without even needing a rolling pin. So there are lots of options for that are easier to kind of get you started a little faster.
I love that. I love anything that's nutty and crunchy. And I love the idea of cookie crust. I always like that chocolate cookie crust that you sometimes get on the grasshopper pie. Oh my God. I like that better even than the pie. So here's something that's really great about the Book of Pie. They're savory pies. And I think that's important if somebody goes, oh, I'm not into sweets. I mean, who isn't into sweets? But in case you aren't, there's some amazing savory pies. Let's just make sure we talk about those.
And I'm so glad that you brought this up because I don't like to play favorites with my pie children, but the savory pies have a very special place in my heart. I love them so, so much.
Well, I can tell you the one that made us salivating.
So we got married in New Orleans at Commander's Palace. So the one that caught my eye was the shrimp boil pie.
Oh, yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. And that one is inspired. Like this, one of the things I wanted to do in the book was encourage people to think outside the box a little bit. I think that people who like to bake have no problem thinking that a cake can look however they want it to look and taste however they want it to taste, but they don't necessarily think of that with pie. So I took a memory of a crawfish boil at my friend Rob's house, many years ago. And I wanted to like capture everything that was great about that day in a pie. And I think we nailed it.
Yeah. Well, we haven't made it yet, but we can't wait to make it. And we will eat it on newspaper.
And then we were just talking about peaches with Tara on Bench, Tara Teaspoon, in the last segment. You have a peach shallot prosciutto pie. How yummy does that sound? I mean, it really, we were, and there's one also, we're in November now. There's a two that really stood out seasonality is the Forager's Mushroom Pie and the beet. The beet.
Yes, that has
herb cheese.
Yes.
Skillet pie. Tell us about that.
That's a great one. And I love to bake in a skillet because especially cast iron does a great job of retaining heat, which drives heat to the bottom and the sides of your pie crust to ensure a crisp bake without necessarily needing to enlist the help of par baking. So that's another great reason to love a skillet and cast iron in particular. And that one, the beets get kind of hassleback, where they're cut really, really thin. But still kind of kept together. And that way, when you go to slice the pie and they're tender and they're on this bed of kind of herby cheese, oh, it's so delicious. And you can make it extra over the top by making it with one of my golden cheese pie crusts, which have shredded cheese right in the pie dough. That makes it bake up to the most beautiful color, and it makes your house smell amazing.
Well, our friend just brought home from the, we're in Long Island right now, from the farmer's market, the most stunning beets. And I'm like, that may be really good with that pie, with the cheese crust.
We may have to make one of those.
That may be a Thanksgiving pie.
Beet killer.
Love
of course, of course, Thanksgiving, we're in our Thanksgiving show in the holidays, and everybody's thinking apple and pumpkin, obviously, and sweet potato. What's on your table for Thanksgiving? How many pies are you going to be doing? And do you recommend some riffs on all of those traditional pies?
Yeah, absolutely. I have kind of my favorite, one of my favorites that I do every year is a slightly lesser known, and certainly one I didn't grow up with because we didn't get this particular fruit where I grew up in Kansas. But I love a Concord grape pie, which they're in season in October, like late September, early October. And I'll make some of the pie filling and freeze it so that I can have one for Thanksgiving because it makes this incredibly tart, juicy, just really delicious pie that I love. And of course, this year, it's just my husband and I used to many pies and many people around the Thanksgiving table. So it's a little bit different this year. So I'm actually just making that one pie, but I do have a turkey pot pie planned for some of our leftovers, which I'm very excited about. And I also, as far as riffs on classic pies, one of the things that I like to do to pay homage to that that sweet potato dish you were talking about earlier, where it's often topped with marshmallows, I sometimes top a pumpkin pie with toasted marshmallows, big fat toasted marshmallows. And it's just one of those things that when you bring it to the table, it kind of brings you back to that side dish that a lot of people have, but it's also like such a fun dessert, makes the kids excited and makes the grownups just as wide-eyed and happy.
Well, the photograph in the book is awesome. So let's give a shout out to Mark Weinberg, your food photographer, because the photos just pop and they
Thank you. He's amazing.
So, you know, it's funny, Erin, last year, David and I were in Thanksgiving. It was just us and we were in Hawaii, and there's a place in Maui called Leota's Pie Shop. And we just had pie for Thanksgiving. We bought the pie, but we had the turkey pot pie, chicken pot pie,
and pecan pie.
I think we had the lemon key lime pie. We had a lemon pie. It was some kind of a lemon pie from Maui, but it was just like, you know, piegasm just for Thanksgiving.
That sounds like my ideal Thanksgiving, truthfully. I think I'm going to do that next year. I did one year for Food 52 make a Thanksgiving dinner all in one pie. It was a tiered pie. So the bottom was turkey pot pie. Then the next was creamed greens and the top was cranberry sauce, and they were all baked in crust stacked on one on top of one another.
When I was in college down in Washington DC, I worked at a place called Sutton Place Gourmet, and one of the sandwiches in the deli department was Thanksgiving on a bun.
So Thanksgiving in a pie, you could do that with Christmas in a pie. So what do you, we asked Tara this, what do you do with your pie leftovers? Do you do any fun things with that?
Well, one of my favorite things to do right after Thanksgiving with pie leftovers is to make a pie milkshake, where you take a slice of pie and blend it with ice cream to make an incredible milkshake. And that's particularly great. I mean, it's great with pumpkin pie. It's great with pecan pie. It's great with that Concord grape that I'm going to make. So it's really great with any flavor. I mean, it would be delicious with apple. And it's also nice if the pie has started to, you know, if it's maybe 2 days old and it's a little soggy, the crust isn't holding up as well. Well, then, you know, you can kind of mash it up and get all the flavor without worrying about the texture anymore. And I will always say, people ask me what my favorite flavor of pie is. Mm-hmm. And I always reply that it's breakfast pie, which is just any flavor of pie that I'm eating for breakfast, because I think that's one of the best times to eat pie.
Well, first of all, you do have a breakfast pie in the book with yogurt. And I was like, hoo-hoo, hooray, because I believe pie should be for breakfast. And my favorite thing to do with, I should turn this into a business, is pie cream. I like to take the pie and mush it up into the ice cream and put it in so that you always have pie already mixed in your ice cream. Oh, it's like so good. You can do that with yogurt too. You can do it with the savory pies and yogurt. But the idea is that, you know, you can just continue enjoying your pie. You don't just have, don't you just love it when people say, I'll have a sliver, and then it's down to that tiny last quarter inch sliver in the pan?
Yes. And it's always when people say they just want a sliver, those are the people that come back for two or three more slivers. I always find.
I know. Well, you know, my girlfriend's always says, I'll just have a sliver. And then we always sit there and all look at that longingly, look at that last sliver till somebody starts nibbing at the nose and nibbing at the crust. And eventually the pie is gone.
Well, you can also, I talk about this in the book, but since I'm a food stylist, people always ask me how I get the most beautiful slices of pie because they can be kind of hard to cut. And I always say that if you just take a little tiny slice like this style that you're talking about, I call it the sacrifice slice, then it becomes a lot easier to cut the remaining slices because you have literal wiggle room for the pie in the pan. So you can always give the person who asks for that tiny slice the sacrifice slice and just say, okay, this is what you get.
The sacrifice slice. I love that. That's like so great. We have so enjoyed chatting with you. I mean, listeners, this is the Pie-ble. That's what I call your book, the Pie-ble. it really wants you to roll up your sleeves and get your hands into some dough. Dough can be very therapeutic, you know.
Absolutely. Working with
dough. I think in pie, eating pie can be therapeutic. So the book itself, looking at the book and the photos, is therapeutic. So we just love this book, and we just love chatting with you. You're so enthusiastic. For give everybody your website, because I love, who's the name of the dog on your website? You have the cutest dog.
Yes. My dog Brimley. You can also see him on the back cover of the book on pie. He's the best. We love him. My website is erinjeanmcdowell.com. And of course, you can find me on Instagram anytime at emcdowell. And I'm always answering baking questions there as well. So send me a message if you've got any burning pie questions.
And for our listeners, Jean is G-E-A-N-N-E.
Yes. J-E-N.
Oh, I'm sorry. J-E-N. Sorry about that. I was speaking French for a minute.
It's so funny because it's not hard to pronounce, but my middle name causes much more trouble than my first name, which is only a few letters and easy to pronounce. So, Erin and then J-E-A-N-N-E McDowell.com.
And again, it's the Book of Pie.
It is the Book of Pie, and it's a great book, and we can't wait to make some recipes out of it. And Melanie, when I give you the sacrificial lamb piece of the lamb pie.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Now you'll know what it means.
One slice is nice, but two are better. Have a great Thanksgiving, and thank you for joining us on the Connected Table Live today, Erin G. McDowell.
Thank you for having me.
And all of our listeners, we hope your mouths are watering and you're ready to roll up your sleeves and get dirty in the kitchen, because there's nothing better than good, clean eating straight out of your home. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Live life deliciously. End it with a great slice of pie or more. And thank you for joining us on the Connected Table Live. As always,
stay insatiably curious.
Thank you.